is the theme from the hit AMC television show Mad Men. I am Paul Harris. This is America Weekend. Mad Men is one of a dozen shows that Alan Sepinwall wrote about in his book, The Revolution Was Televised, subtitled The Cops, Crooks, Slingers, and Slayers Who Changed TV Drama Forever. I read the book last year, cover to cover, in a weekend when it came out in hardcover. Now it is out in paperback, and I can recommend it to you. And welcome back to the show, the author, Alan Sepinwall. Hi, Alan. Welcome to America Weekend.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
So let's talk about Mad Men at the beginning. I'm getting a little frustrated with this show. I agree with you that it was a game-changing show, but unfortunately, I think the show is changing so much and is so hard to keep up with that I want them to bring back the old VH1 pop-up video to explain to me what is happening and who is doing what in each episode.
The last episode in particular, where everyone was high on speed, was a very strange one. I've been hearing a lot of complaints this year that people don't like Don or are having trouble following certain things. Definitely, this is a much more divisive year than they've ever had before.
And you write reviews of all of these episodes for HitFix.com. You stay up on Sunday nights. Maybe you're getting screeners, I don't know, but I think you're staying up on Sunday nights and writing them into the wee hours so that we can all read them first thing on Monday morning. Do you understand and follow everything that Matthew Weiner and his crew are doing?
I'm able to follow it well enough, I guess, and no, I'm not getting screeners. I'm just staying up, and maybe there's something about the insomnia being triggered there where it puts me into an altered state where I can keep track of it. But it's definitely gone into some stranger places as they've gone into a stranger part of the 1960s.
Do you think that they are risk going down the same road that Lost did, which started out as a great show? It's another one of the ones that you profile in The Revolution Was Televised. But as it got weirder, it lost viewers.
I don't know. I mean, I think that the audience is still pretty good for the show, and it's built over time as people catch up on it between seasons. I think the difference between this and Lost is Lost was such a plot-driven show, and there were all these mysteries, and you wanted to know the answers, and that's ultimately what made so many people upset, is they didn't get the answers that they wanted. There's no real mystery left on Mad Men. You know who Don Draper was, you know what happened to Peggy's baby, and all of that. So if people are unhappy, they're going to be unhappy, but I don't know that it's going to hurt the overall legacy in the way that some people are so mad at how Lost ended that they just hate all of Lost.
All right, let's talk about the bigger picture, not just focus the entire conversation here on that one show. Only a few of the shows that you write about in the book aired on the big four, Fox, ABC, NBC, and CBS. Do you think that those networks are in danger of losing the quality TV game forever?
I mean, there's still some quality shows. NBC has Parenthood, CBS has The Good Wife. There's a number of really terrific comedies on the broadcast networks as well. It's just sort of harder for them to do, and when they try to do it, they tend not to be successful. I think Hannibal on NBC is a fantastic show. It's still somewhat in limbo. The ratings are not very good at all. They might bring it back just because it's cheap. They might not, but it's just you look at a show like that, and you see how it's performing, and you wonder, you know, if this was on FX, it would be a much bigger hit, I think.
What about the effect of Netflix, which had the Kevin Spacey series House of Cards earlier this year, and this weekend is putting out the new episodes that they've produced of Arrested Development, the old Fox series? What's the impact of that on the television quality landscape?
Well, I think that's going to be really interesting, because one of the things that I write about a lot in the book is this idea that the revolution came in stages as different outlets decided that they wanted to do this. So first HBO said, we're going to make our own dramas, and there was this period of bold innovation. Then FX decided they were going to do it, and you got The Shield and Nip Tuck and Rescue Me. Then AMC started to do it and forced everyone else to raise their game. So if Netflix winds up being this huge success and they start winning Emmys and all of that, it's going to force everyone else to respond to that, and I think that can only be good.
Yeah. Didn't the revolution in quality drama in particular, you know, we can leave aside comedy, which I think, you know, The Big Bang Theory and to a certain extent Modern Family are certainly keeping the great comedy tradition alive. But didn't the quality drama era really start back with Hill Street Blues 3 decades ago?
Yeah, I mean, Hill Street Blues is kind of the Citizen Kane of all of this. It took all of these different elements that had been part of TV before, but never all in one place. Put it all into a show. It was a great show. It was a very influential show. None of these shows exist without that and St. Elsewhere and L.A. Law and Homicide and NYPD Blue and the ones that followed. But yeah, that was kind of the kickoff. It's just the thing I read about in the book is as good as those shows were, they still had to compromise to a degree because they were on a broadcast network and because they were aiming for a big audience. So they had to spoon-feed people in a way that The Sopranos never did and in the way that The Wire certainly did.
In talking to the people who made these modern classics, did they say that they were influenced by those?
Some of them did, some of them didn't. David Chase, the creator of The Sopranos, has nothing but disdain for any of the TV that came before him, including a lot of the shows that he himself worked on. You know, I talked about how he, you know, his resume has some of the best shows in TV history, and he says, I never really thought so.
How hard was it for some of these showrunners to get the independence that they need to create their vision?
Independence is hard. A lot of the shows in the book that were the result of some unique circumstances. HBO was still new at this, so there weren't really any rules in place. There's kind of a Wild West quality of new frontiers being opened up and a lawlessness to it so that each person could get away with something that they probably couldn't get away with quite as well today. You know, AMC, HBO, FX, they all have kind of very strict protocols in place, and they still produce really good shows. I don't know if they're quite as adventurous as the ones that came before.
Yeah. I am a huge fan of Breaking Bad, although I admit that I was one of those who did not watch it for the first few seasons. I ended up binge-watching it in time to catch up with it, and then I didn't have that done until last summer's first half of its finale season was done. So I'm desperately waiting for another week or two to go by before those DVDs come out, and then the final eight episodes I know will start airing in August. And I'm a little bit worried because in the past, when some of my favorite shows have been coming to an end, their finales were not that great.
This
are you worried
true.
About
finales
that with some of these shows?
Finales are very hard. You know, people, I think, look down on The Sopranos more than they probably should because they didn't like the finale, the same way with Lost. You know, of the shows in the book, the only sort of universally acclaimed finales were The Shield, Friday Night Lights, and kind of The Wire, but a lot of people didn't like the last season of The Wire. It's just, you know, you get to the end and there's so many expectations and people have so many different ideas of what they want to see, and it becomes very hard for the creators of these shows to pull it off. I think Vince Gilligan, who's the creator of Breaking Bad, he's done really well with finales in the past, so I'm feeling pretty good about what he's going to be able to do with these final eight episodes. But certainly, if the ending is terrible, that's going to, you know, change the show's legacy to a degree.
What has Gilligan done before?
He used to write for The X-Files. He was one of their best writers for a long time and you know, wrote a few feature films, but sort of nothing that suggested the ability to do this before.
Yeah, you know, when we talk about finales, we just happened to pass the 15th anniversary of the Seinfeld finale, which, like MASH and the Cheers finale and others, were amongst the most watched TV shows of all time. But nobody would tell you that that was one of the best episodes of Seinfeld. Do you think in some of these cases they get to a bad finale because they've gotten to a bad point because they've just burned out the show?
I think that's a lot of it. In a lot of cases, you know, the great shows are so successful they stay on past the point at which they probably should have ended. You know, there were only five seasons of the Dick Van Dyke Show, only seven seasons of Mary Tyler Moore. So every now and then you have someone just coming out and saying, we need to stop this now before it gets bad. But, you know, the Cheers finale is a great episode. I think with the Seinfeld finale, it was less that the show was tired than that Larry David, who hadn't worked on the last two seasons, came back and decided he had sort of a point he wanted to make. And he wanted to make it very clear to everyone that the characters on the show were terrible. And he was so busy kind of lecturing the audience that he forgot to make it funny.
I want to go back to one of the shows you mentioned, which I said was one of my favorites, which was Friday Night Lights, which did not have a big viewership, but certainly had me from episode one to its finale. One of the things that made that show unique was its shooting style. And you write about that in the book. Would you share some of that with my audience today?
Sure. Traditionally, the way you shoot episodes and scenes in television and in film is you shoot sort of one big shot, which has all your actors working together, and then you do close-ups, and everything is very carefully choreographed and very explicitly structured, and everyone has instructions about where you're supposed to go and what you're supposed to do. And with Friday Night Lights, they just had, you know, three or four cameras all rolling at the same time and no really significant choreography. They just sort of told people, here's what the scene's going to be about, this is what you're going to say, the actors had freedom to deviate from the dialogue when they wanted to, sort of freedom to move how they wanted to, you know, make gestures, and the camera operators could shoot whatever they thought was the most interesting part of the scene. And so there's a sense of intimacy to that show and emotional intensity that you don't usually get, even on some of these other great shows, which are more classically filmed.
Gave it a real unique look. The book is called The Revolution Was Televised by TV critic Alan Sepinwall from HitFix.com. It's out now in paperback. A great pleasure to talk to you again, Alan. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Paul.
This is America Weekend.
America Weekend.